now going to move to the first panel on the agenda, which is an overview of interoperability in health and healthcare. A panel that, and I would invite our panelists to come up and join us here on the at the front of the room. Don Rucker, Christopher Ross, Chantel Wurzala, Mickey Tripathi, who may be a little late, I understand. Oh, just walked. Oh, good. and Julia Adler-Milstein. What I'm going to do is give the brief introductions on each of the panelists and then invite them in turn to come up and address us from the podium. Don Rucker, as has already been noted, is the National Coordinator for Health IT in the Department of Health and Human Services, leads the formulation of the federal HIT strategy, and coordinates the IT policy, standards, and programs and investments. And Dr. Rucker is well known to many of you in the room, has 3 decades of clinical informatics experience. Christopher Ross is the Chief Information Officer of the Mayo Clinic. And prior to that, he was Executive Vice President and General Manager of the Clinical Interoperability Business for SureScripts. Also has nearly 3 decades of experience in healthcare information technology and government, serves on the HHS Health IT Standards Committee and the Markle Foundation Connecting for Health Steering Committee. Chantel Wurzala is the Vice President of Health Information and Policy Operations at the American Hospital Association, and her primary area of focus there is health IT use and policy development. She has more than 20 years of experience in international and domestic health policy, focusing on policy for health IT. Mickey Tripathi, we're so happy for the that the skies parted and allowed you to land this morning, is the president and CEO of Massachusetts eHealth Collaborative. He's been a nationally recognized leader in health IT interoperability since his founding leadership of the Indiana Health Information Exchange, setting the pace for many related activities throughout the country, and is currently leading the HL7 ARGONET project. And Julia Adler-Milstein is Associate Professor and Director of Clinical Informatics and Improvement Research at the University of California at San Francisco, where a core focus of her work is on health information exchange and interoperability. So thanks to each of you for being with us today. And Don, may I invite you to come up to the podium?
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. Well, good morning. I think it's appropriate that the Moore Foundation is sponsoring this, because this is really a Moore's Law play, right? You know, computer power doubling every 18 months, you know, remarkably prescient prediction given that it was made in 1965. Well, so there's a lot of math when you double it for whatever we are now, 50 years. As we look at it, obviously the fact that we're having this meeting says that we've sort of still have a lot of work to do on interoperability. I think that's part of it. It is worth noting from the ONC and from the federal point of view that all of this hit the attention of Congress. So the 21st Century Cures Act, which was passed almost unanimously in December of 2016, actually has a quite large amount of language on interoperability. So if you haven't sort of looked at that, it's worth pondering that. The law actually has 3 very specific areas that it lays out. One is open APIs, so application programming interfaces. The second is a prohibition against information blocking. And the third is this concept of trusted exchange frameworks. And at ONC, so part of HHS, that as you might imagine, is a large part of our work. It is an extension of the work on electronic health records. I see Vindell Washington, who is a former ONC coordinator here, who's worked on that as well. Now, as we look at that, I think there are 2 big use cases I would throw out to you that part of the reason we're having problems with interoperability is because we've defined it too narrowly. We have defined interoperability in a very provider-centric way for a very long time. It is baked in the water. It is so baked in that we don't even realize how we're narrowing ourselves in thinking about interoperability. We've historically thought about provider A to provider B about one patient, right? So the classic sort of case, you're in the emergency department and you want to know whether somebody had an MRI or a CAT scan or what their surgery was at some point in the past. That's a very, very narrow definition. What CURES really says is we need to think about interoperability in a much broader way. I think there's two broad ways to look at it, to extend that. The first is actually out retail to patients. How are we going to get electronic data to patients, right? What is that interface? What is that technical interoperability? And as I'm sure everybody noticed here, Apple had a major announcement on this last week. So I think that is a major proof statement. We'll talk a little bit more about how they're doing it. So the case out to the patient, I think, is critical. The other big case that we have to think about is interoperability, not as a onesies game, but on a patient population level, right? So how can you take data in bulk, you know, an entire flat file, a population level, and get that data and analyze it? Because we're not going to have anything in modern computer science, machine learning, big data, artificial intelligence. There's 1,000 ways you can label it. There's probably more than 1,000 techniques. Interestingly enough, they often end up with the exact same result computationally. That's a very interesting side thing. Maybe we can talk about that too, over lunch or something. But how are we going to get population level data and free that? Now, all of that, of course, has to come under the laws of HIPAA, and it easily can. So at ONC, and I think I'm talking throughout our federal government, David and CMS, Seema Verma, we've had constant conversations about how to do these things. So if we look at patients, if we look at populations, there are three specific areas that we are working on from the ONC part of that national contribution of the federal government. The first is, and I want to call out Chuck Jaffe and HL7, our partner in crime here. So the first is, when you look at open application programming interfaces, you may have heard that in the law. What you may not have heard is the add-on phrase. The add-on phrase is without special effort. That's actually the most important part of that. It's not the open API, right? I can write absolutely horrible student code, make a couple function calls available, and it can be an open API, but it's utterly unusable. There's no documentation. There's no tools. There's absolutely nothing. So it's the without special effort. So using modern computer stacks, modern technologies, proprietary open source, however, that really are critical here as we look at that. And we'll have rulemaking on that this spring under the Cures Act to do that. But when we look at the open API, I think in a modern computing world, that has to go to what is called a RESTful standard, R-E-S-T, capitalized. It's computer jargon. It leverages the internet. JSON is the data standard. Again, you can sort of look those up. But it's what powers the entire app economy, that standard. Bringing that to healthcare is absolutely critical. Two specific things we're doing there are, first, in order to have this consumer grade, you have to have persistent access, persistent tokens. That's a very specific, very technical consideration, but it's absolutely essential to getting that out to consumers, is that persistent access. The second is extending that work to populations. The current FHIR standards really are coming out of that individual patient paradigm. It turns out it's pretty easy to extend. I see Anish Chopra, former CTO, who's been leading that charge. So those are important things as we look today, is what are the technical extensions we need to really get it to patients and to really get it to populations. Two other quick things. Information blocking. Congress has actually defined information blocking. When I got to ONC, I thought we were supposed to define it, but it actually turns out we have many lawyers at ONC, a couple doctors, Andy Gettinger here. We actually are to define exceptions to information blocking. So you'll see that coming out. Obviously, the goal of ONC is to make this as frictionless as possible. Our job is not to find exceptions and to get into the justice system. Our job is to work with you and really try to get everybody on, increasingly on the same page here. So information blocking. The final part is what is called Trusted Exchange Framework Common Agreement. If you don't like it, if you don't like the acronym, Capitol Hill's a couple blocks away. You can write. But the concept here is, how do we get the various networks? So what we're talking about are the health information exchanges, the regional health information organizations. We're talking about some of the vendor-sponsored networks, Care Quality, Commonwealth. How do we get those together? Right? As a provider, providers want a single on-ramp. They do not want to be logging on to 25 networks, let's say, to send information to the VA. So how do we get that? I think that's pretty close. The way it's written in the law, there will be a coordinating entity, and we're going to select that and go on from there. That's in public comment period right now up through February 20th. So if the frameworks and networks is an area you'd like to comment on, please do so. So those are the three areas that the Cures Act puts into law, and that from an ONC point of view, we're spending time on. There are a lot of other things we don't have time to talk about. I do want to double down on what Secretary Shulkin said, which is, this is something that really has the attention of the White House. We really, as an administration, see this as an absolutely critical thing to the reform of healthcare, to the president's goal of letting all Americans effectively shop for care, control their own information. Seema Verma, who, as you know, is the administrator of CMS, is extremely interested in this. We know that Alex Azar, the new secretary, has talked about this at length in the confirmation hearings. So we're, as a group, very excited to be taking notes here today and learn what we can. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Don. We're going to have questions and comments at the end of the session, but if there's a quick clarification question you want to put to Dr. Rucker. If not, let's then move directly to Christopher Ross.